What time is it?
It's nearly 5 to 4.
So I think I've been here 5 hours. I've got to start heading back because of the traffic, and it's been a glorious, glorious day. Who are you? Twitter name?
UK cameraman.
MC Fontaine.
Elevate underscore Dan.
Tozini.
With a Brazilian accent there. You didn't fly here this morning, did you?
Sorry?
You didn't fly here this morning.
I didn't.
No. Came on the train, I know, from Appleford, because Mark kindly picked them up. I'm just going to step over George Orwell's grave here and say, Dan, we've been chatting about some bits and bobs, mainly about encryption. Dan is, of course, from the Elevate Festival in Austria, who came last year for the first time. And there are some recordings of conversations we had back then. You're talking about something that's been released recently, which looks exciting around encryption. What were you showing us here and running a little workshop on PGP? And I understand a hell of a lot more about PGP encryption now than I did this morning at breakfast. So please tell.
The product is called Silent Circle. It's available online at silentcircle.com. And it's actually in beta test. You can sign up for a beta test phase, but it's an encryption suite to encrypt text, video, voice, and email communication with smartphones. And it has been developed by Phil Zimmermann, the inventor of PGP, and a team of Navy SEALs and cyberpunks.
It's kind of weird when you look at the video. They're talking about a group of Navy SEALs getting together with a group of geeks and developing something that looks like it enables privacy over all media. Are you saying this is of corporate interest, or is this military interest, or is this just general public interest?
I think it's of interest to all parties involved. But you have to, of course, Silent Circle is something that needs to be looked at closely. They might have their own VPN network and use a proprietary software, which is, of course, not as open and transparent as an open source product. So this has to be looked into, but certainly the persons involved, like Phil Zimmermann, is certainly someone I would trust.
And of course, this potentially shows the beginning of a new wave of not just software, but I guess awareness in this field. People suddenly thinking that, well, hang on, maybe I deserve the right to at least semi-private conversation. I'm not a terrorist or a paedophile.
Well, I'm not so optimistic with that. I think the majority of people still completely don't care at all about privacy online. I think it will take a few, many people who experience what it means to share all the data and have some negative outcomes from that. I think there needs to be more people experiencing something bad with sharing all the data. And I think it's not so easy, even with interesting new products like that, to create awareness for secure communication.
Coming from Austria, and when you come to the UK, which you do regularly, and hear about some of the laws that are looking to be implemented here, how do you feel about the state of the internet in itself? Because surely any laws that are implemented here will affect people worldwide. If my email correspondence starts being documented and logged, and I'm talking to you, doesn't matter what country you're in, you will be falling under the same restriction, surely.
Yeah, and that's, again, nothing new, really, because the NSA and also the Britons and many others have had spying networks monitoring fax and phone communications in the whole Cold War. And I think the NSA is also, it is actually reported that they monitor data traffic, they monitor it on a large scale. So I'm not surprised by these new measures here. It's just surprising that some of the techniques that are used, and that they put it really, that they also bring the ISPs into the game, where they put certain technology into ISPs data centers, and that's, well, it's quite it's horrible, actually, what's proposed here in Britain. It's also what's going on in Europe is nothing much better. Data retention basically means that everyone is a suspect, and that they record all the communications data up front, even when you're not a criminal, and that's certainly not what a free society is about, that everyone is a suspect and everyone's communication is stored before even proven of any criminal activity. And that's sitting here at George Orwell's grave for a very sad thing. But yeah, I think people are giving away their private information anyway. If you look at Facebook or if you use Gmail and Facebook, you're basically giving away everything without any government forcing you to.
And it's not just communication we need to think about, is it really? The surveillance works down to every click, to the level of every interaction we have with the internet itself, whether it be a purchased item or a visited page. Mark, MC Fontaine, do you think about this at all when you're using the web? Sit here supping your coffee from your coffee making kit. You have a kazoo in your hand, which isn't a metaphor, and a shaky egg. Go on, give it a shake. Does this bother you at all when you're browsing the web? Do you ever think about this?
Yeah, I do, but I think it's like life in general. You need to, you share stuff with certain people, and therefore on the web you're sharing stuff with certain companies. But I think you need to think more, because you're not just sharing with those companies. It's not like you're just telling a friend a phone number. It's like you're telling a friend a phone number and they're telling all their other friends that phone number. So I think people do need to be more wary of what they do on the web.
And it's interesting, you're talking about friends kind of sharing stuff that you have told them. We actually forget about how certain information can be kind of leaked out of private networks by the participants themselves. UK cameraman, when I arrived here, you were the first person to turn up, and we got to spend a good couple of hours talking, and we talked about an awful lot of stuff that we would never probably talk about online. Do you see online and offline as two separate spaces when it comes to sharing?
I do, but it depends who I'm sharing it with. If I'm sharing stuff online, it means I want to share it, and I don't particularly mind who sees it, because it's online. It's the very nature of the thing, and especially using Twitter, Facebook and various other blogs that I've got. But I'm of the mind that if you don't want it to be seen, don't put it on the internet.
Does this come from a TV cameraman's perspective, because you are aware that you are broadcasting?
Yeah, I'm very much aware that I'm broadcasting, and that people who I know, people who I don't know, are seeing the content that I'm putting out there, whether it's on my blog or on my little blogs or on Twitter or on Facebook or on YouTube, on all of the online places that I'm at. I know that it can be seen by anybody worldwide with an internet connection. So again, you know, if I've got a little piece of footage or a little piece of audio or some snippet of information that I don't want people to see, I don't put it on the internet.
Interesting, you have been reprimanded in the past, have you not, for sharing online? And it may have been accidentally leaking a story before time? Or?
It's very, very easy to leak a story when you're on Twitter as much as I am, and you're working for broadcasters who have got a particular story to tell, but they've got in their mind when they are going to tell it. And if somebody like me says, I'm at so-and-so place, I'm filming with so-and-so person who is telling me so-and-so story, well, I've just released all of that information before the broadcaster has had time to. And I did get dragged into the boss's office once and told in no uncertain terms, ask before you tweet sometimes, because you nearly dropped us in it.
Yeah. I know that some broadcasters are a little more paranoid than others about these things, but they all have to have their policies and do so now. I'm going to ask about Brazil. Does privacy exist online in the channels that Brazilian people choose to use?
For television, you know, in Brazil there is a big television who dominates the other TVs. So, and about privacy, people use a lot of Facebook and Twitter, and Brazilians loves to share. They are always using social media platforms. They are really early adopters, and they don't see problem to when they share information, and when they share all kind of stuff, photos, and I think it's a Brazilian way of life.
So they may be a little bit more oblivious, unknowing of the, some of the dangers that might be out there, because they're just so happy to share. And you mentioned TV, so a lot of the TV companies are owned by an individual TV company?
No, there's a lot of TV channels,
yeah.
But there's a bigger one called Rede Globo, mm-hmm. who has the biggest share.
Okay, the biggest viewership.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they dominate the...
Dominate the airwaves, yeah. Maybe, giving people more reason to head to the interwebs. I'm going to ask Mark to play us out in a moment with a song. To drop him in it.
There was something else that I wanted to speak to you about with reference to broadcasters and that as well, and that's because I'm also followed by fellow journalists from, you know, from the BBC, from ITV, from Sky, from ITN, all the various news broadcasters. So it's not just releasing information before time, it's releasing it to your competition.
Yeah. So you're a bridge between all of these different brands as such.
I wouldn't call myself a bridge. I work for the first person who calls me up in the morning. That's what being freelance is all about. Yeah. But if I'm working for, let's say, ITN, and I'm tweeting about what I'm doing for ITN, it's going to get picked up by people I know in the BBC.
That's what I mean by a bridge. You're like a data, whether you, a conduit might be, without meaning it.
But I might be a conduit for the wrong information because one side might not know about a particular story that the other side does.
Yeah.
And by the time the other side wants to release that story, the other side have already done it. And that's what you've got to be careful about being online, is releasing it to the person who you didn't want to release it to before time.
Yeah, we've got to think so much more about this. Dan, of course, is a very conscientious sharer. He thinks, you know, he almost announces, I am about to tweet, because you've thought about what this is. And it's normally information that you think is very important to share, and normally something that's going to enhance somebody's life, be it educationally or otherwise. You were here last year. How do you feel this year compared to last year? Are things getting better? Are things getting worse?
Nothing is black or white, so I think there's some things getting better and some things are getting worse. But in general, I think, I feel like to be in this position of taking a more radical approach or being more really aware of what's happening is a necessary approach, because on the large scale, you don't see much consciousness in using new technologies, and it's of no wonder, I think, because technologies are developing extremely fast, and human consciousness is not always able to keep up with the speed of technological development, I think. And 1 year, it's my second year here at Orwell's Grave, and I think it's a very good opportunity to think again, and I think that's very good.
You've certainly made me think again. seems to be police helicopters, not this time, but flying over every time we're here. You've made me think seriously now about encryption, and it might be that I might create some kind of email blog. I know it sounds like I'm going back in time, but if I release that email blog as an encrypted email, it would encourage more people, would it not, to sign up for PGP, and then they would have to unencrypt my email to read that blog post. And maybe if more people released maybe interesting content to other people, because if I got an encrypted email, I'd really want to unencrypt that. It's almost turning it into a game. But once the facility is there and it's plugged into your email client, maybe you would start thinking, oh, I'm going to encrypt this. I'm going to encrypt this. This is private. I'm going to encrypt this. And the more we think about it, the more we do it, until at one point we might not even turn it off, and everything we do is, it's about behavior, isn't it? Everything we do could end up being encrypted.
Well, it's so easy if you think back 20 years or 30 years. Would you write the love letter to your girlfriend on a postcard, or would you put it in an envelope? It's very simple. I mean, buying an envelope, putting a letter into an envelope was a process that you had to do. The same thing is happening now. Do you want to write a postcard, or do you want to write something in an envelope? that's a decision you have to make every time. You might still want to write postcards, but some things you might want to stick into an envelope.
And on those same lines, would we still use in the UK the Royal Mail Service or whatever they're called now? Would we still use them if we knew that every letter we were sending was being steamed open, taken out, read, scanned, digitised, archived, resealed, and then sent on to the person we were sending it to? I don't think I would. I think I'd start finding a way of hiding my stories, my thoughts, my love letters within those envelopes. That's not a song.